traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice on Cannabis Radio. Here we are in the new year of 2022, recording our first episode of the year as well. And I'm happy to welcome a couple members of our hemp committee, Liz Mason and Keith Butler. Liz Mason is the director of operations at Aurum Labs and Aurum Hemp. Both companies focus on compliance testing for marijuana and industrial hemp products. They were also one of the first certified cannabis testing labs in Colorado and in the United States. They're USDA, ISO 17025 accredited, and Colorado State certified. Keith Butler was brought into the world of cannabis advocacy in 1979, and in 1987 joined the hemp revolution started by Jack Herer. Beginning his first formulations company in the early 90s, manufacturing supplements, Keith has never stopped learning from the natural world. With backgrounds in law, science, manufacturing, and distribution, Keith has traveled the world as an ambassador of the plant. In 2019, Keith co-founded OP Innovates, which stands for Our Plant, Our Planet, to manufacture and distribute products utilizing the natural absorption methods of Naturia Plus, an organic patent-pending cannabinoid delivery method Keith co-invented. That sounds fascinating. We'll have to hear more about that. Welcome you both to the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happy New Year.
Oh, yes. Happy New Year. So in addition to what I've already shared, I'd like to get to know you all a little bit better for our audience here. So let's learn a little bit more about your background and maybe some other things you've done before getting involved in the cannabis industry. And I know for you, Keith, that was a long time ago, but you've got you have a lot of experience in the world outside of the plant as well. Is that right?
I do. I spent about a decade of my life trying to practice law. I've gotten to travel around the world as a professional photographer. I did photography for a catalog company for about 10 years. And what started me truly in the falling, becoming the true hemp guy was my original profession was a jeweler. And I had a jewelry manufacturing company. And Steve and Andrew D'Angelo and Eric Stenstra set up one of the first hemp-based companies in the early 90s, and I made the cannabis leaf jewelry for Ecolution in the early 90s. So it's been quite the journey, always intertwined with cannabis pretty much for a full 40 years in some way, shape, or form. And then through the 80s, I just touted around the Emperor Wears No Clothes everywhere I went. I've traveled all over the planet, more than 60 countries, and I carried the emperor with me and turned on the world to the beauties and benefits of hemp and cannabis. So it's been a long ride.
Wow, that's great. You know, we got to hang, you know, one of these NCIA conferences, we're going to have to find a smoke circle and chat more one of these days. It sounds like you have a lot of stories.
Oh, I'm all in. Yeah, I've been really fortunate and been able to share cannabis around the world with people in all over the place, even in the Middle East. I got to smoke hash in a cave with the Bedouins, which are the original nomads of the land. And I've really gotten to experience life and culture. And if there's one thing I've learned, cannabis is the one thing that brings everybody together. It doesn't matter your race or your religion or your country, people who enjoy cannabis share it with each other. It's really a wonderful thing to be a part of.
So That's awesome. Thanks for that, Keith. How about you, Liz? What did you do in the before time?
Sure. Yeah. And I just wanted to say, I always learned something new about Keith every time I talk to him. I didn't know you were a jeweler. That's pretty interesting. We'll have to talk about that. But for me, I've really always been a scientist. Just wasn't in the cannabis space, but you know, I was born and raised in Oklahoma and came to Colorado when I was young to attend college and go to grad school. And I have a very well-rounded science education. I didn't have, usually like you have a real strong emphasis on something, but I was a chemist working for in the microbiology department at CSU, but for an engineering professor. So I got to really experience a lot of different types of science, which has helped me immensely in where I currently am. And right before I started the lab with my husband, I pivoted slightly out of the research lab and I was doing a science advisory position at Fort Lewis College here in Durango, Colorado, where I currently am. And I was getting to mentor and teach young budding scientists. And that was really fun. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great as well. So we're glad to have both of you on the hemp committee here at NCIA as well. As we move on here, some people have a reason for being in the cannabis industry, and sometimes there's an interesting story around how they got into the cannabis industry. And I'm just curious if either of you have any of those anecdotes. Liz?
Sure. When Amendment 64 passed in Colorado, which is you know, legalizing recreational marijuana, me and my husband were watching that all unfold, and I think the world was really watching. You know, what was this legal industry going to look like? And we've always just been advocates for the plant, and we saw it just as a really good opportunity to get involved. And we started out, we said we wanted to legitimize and destigmatize cannabis and really just advocate the health and wellness effects. And, you know, in the war on drugs that's used cannabis to marginalize people for so long. So we're really just passionate about what we do and our place in the industry.
Yes, absolutely. How about you, Keith? Awesome. So I often like to ask my guests, you know, how they got into the cannabis industry and if they have a personal story about how that happened. So I wonder if you could share that with us, Keith.
Sure. It was pretty straightforward. I was 14 years old and I had gotten caught by my best friend's sister for taking her weed from her drawer. And she said, "You have to buy it." And she brought us to Washington, D.C. on July 4th and introduced me to the world of cannabis and cannabis advocacy. Her friend was Steve D'Angelo. And I met Steve as a young boy. I started learning about cannabis. I became a part of the tribe and basically didn't go through the alcohol phase in high school. I became the cannabis guy. And at this point now, we're looking at over 40 years of regular cannabis use and not doing alcohol, which has become kind of my mantra, that it's the balancing agent or the companion plant, as I put it, to us to keep us in health and wellness. So that's basically where it came from. And then I was all into science throughout my life. My father's a scientist. So despite my passion for law and the legalization, I ended up on the science side of cannabis, working with bioavailability and efficacy, and ultimately filed a patent in 2017 for a natural method of bioavailability, which was recently granted. So I'm pretty happy about how the cannabis industry has been conducive to an interesting life, which I've quite enjoyed.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. All those anecdotes from decades ago and even longer ago. We have the science now, which is really incredible. So we can say, told you so.
That's all that. It's all about the science. And, you know, I preach that every day. It's super important.
Yeah. So we only have another minute or so left before our commercial break. But let's fast forward to today, where both of you are professionals in the budding cannabis industry and all of its puns, and serving on NCIA's hemp committee. So quickly, you know, what's going on with you today and in the immediate future, Keith?
I work with Naturia Plus. That's the delivery method. I have a company called OP Innovates that licenses that technology, and we search for high-end, wonderful companies that care about the plant to make their products deliver better and more effectively. So clinical trials. That's my world.
Wow. Cool. Liz?
Yeah. So I do cannabis testing for the state regulations. So, you know, mostly public health and safety testing. The director of operations, which is a fancy way of saying that I just make sure, you know, the place doesn't catch on fire, or keep everybody employed, try to steer the ship the right way. And I'm also a mom of two little kids who just got a surprise puppy for Christmas. So I'm staying really, really busy these days.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's so cute.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, we're so happy to have you both in NCIA's committees and in our membership as well, and contributing to the thought leadership and policy recommendations that is NCIA's work and couldn't be done without its members.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Industrial hemp is really interesting. But I mean, I'm sure I wouldn't want to ingest it, right? We're talking more about hempcrete and textiles and fuel and other useful items for construction or sustainable clothing. Is that right when we're talking about industrial hemp?
Yeah, and that was something that the Hemp Committee for NCIA really wanted to do some more education around, because we talk about cannabinoids a lot. And what we tend to leave out is that industrial hemp can be used for all types of products. You know, traditionally, it was grown for fiber and to make things like rope and clothing. They would press the seeds to make oil and use that for lamp oil and paint and things like that. The modern day uses are really cool because it's building material, like you mentioned, but we're also using biodegradable plastics. We're putting it in batteries, beauty products, solar panels. They recently even made a car with hemp. So, you know, the issue, though, is that we need infrastructure, like the supply chains and the processing and the manufacturing facilities necessary to create the market products. Those need to be more established. And that's really what we need to focus on, is getting that infrastructure in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Industrial hemp was really a word that was used, again, to create a legal definition. And currently, all of the CBD products that are being manufactured come by definition from industrial hemp. But industrial hemp's uses span into the tens of thousands. And as Liz had said, a car, someone recently started a plane company building planes out of hemp. They're using it in car panels and sound dampening. And we're up to graphene now. We can actually make graphene from the hemp plant. So the uses are almost unlimited. No, it's amazing.
Yeah. So So with that industrial hemp definition, it sounds like it could possibly include food for humans on an agricultural level. Am I getting that right?
Oh, you got that right. So it's not just food for humans, but the way hemp was utilized before it was outlawed is we would use it as a feed. The seeds were fed to our chickens and the cows grazed in pastures with these plants in it. And those animals ingested the compounds and then they passed it on to us and their milk and their eggs and their meat. And we were getting those compounds with the elimination of the plant from the food chain. And this really is the big question of it all. Is hemp a part of the food chain or not? And it truly is. It has been since the beginning of mankind, if you go by what Dr. Carl Sagan says. But the government views hemp as not a food and not something that is, in fact, ingestible yet. So, and as we're working on that of getting certified feed in animal foods, that's the first step, is getting hemp seeds and hemp proteins regulated, or not really regulated, really approved is the better word, for use in the diets of our agricultural system, be it the animals we eat or just growing it in the fields as a rotational crop and letting the animals graze off of those rotational crops.
Gotcha.
So it is definitely food, and you'll find lots of hemp protein products on the market right now.
Yeah.
That are just utilizing the proteins from hemp. They have no THC whatsoever, nor do they have any CBD. They don't have any active cannabinoids. They're just providing the essential fatty acids profile, which the hemp plant is really a spectacular plant for a fatty acid profile.
Yeah, yeah. That's really fascinating stuff. And we have to jump to our next commercial break here before picking up the conversation. But maybe we should get back to those practices of feeding hemp to our cows, because I have to make the joke that milk would really do a body good. So all of this stuff, industrial hemp, compounds, synthetics, they're all shifting due to the Farm Bill of 2018. Our friend Mitch McConnell helped with that. This kind of sort of effectively legalized hemp, but honestly, it also left a lot of gray area for us to sift through. Keith, can you shed some light on that?
I'd be glad to. This is one of the most important things I think that the entire industry, hemp and cannabis, face. And that is, when hemp was legalized, the authority of hemp was placed under the FDA and the USDA. The USDA to develop programs to grow it, and the FDA to develop programs for the safe use of it. What was missed was our system is based on two things. What we call old dietary ingredients, those are things that existed, which were consumed by humans before the regulation and legislative bodies created regulatory authorities over food. And then new dietary ingredients, things that have come up since the regulations began. Oddly enough, in the United States, we don't have a process in the FDA to define and create and legalize a new dietary ingredient, because there haven't been any. Cannabis was legal long before the regulations changed. And that's the sticking point, is what Congress should have done is given some direction to the FDA as to what they wanted the plant to be regulated as, whether it was to be considered a new dietary ingredient or a new drug, or if it was considered safe through historical use as an old dietary ingredient. And that's where we've run into the gray area, because the day hemp was legalized, the FDA said it was illegal to put it in food and drink.
Yeah, so the FDA just kind of threw up their hands and said, we're not going to regulate this. And it's put us in a really weird situation between the state and federal agencies that regulate it.
Right. Yeah. It seems like everyone's throwing up their hands and saying, not it, it's those guys over there. And then those guys are saying, nope, not it, it's those guys over there. And it's just kind of going around in a circle and nobody's stepping up to really do it.
Yeah, luckily the states are starting to realize that the FDA may not step in time, and they want a regulated, safe industry, and so that they are trying to fill that gap. But it's taking a little while.
It sure is.
Yeah, one thing I really appreciate about, you know, NCIA members, the cannabis industry, the hemp industry, is, you know, we are kind of self-regulating from the inside out in preparation for what could be federal legalization. So I have the sense that we're looking to other operational standards from other industries and have a lot of consumer safety in mind as we're going forward. So there's a lot to be optimistic about, even though the greater powers that be are dragging their feet, I suppose. So we have about 3 minutes or so here left on this episode. And, you know, I really want to thank you all for your membership with NCIA and you know, our committees are completely volunteer efforts. I believe there's 7 or 8 members of the Hemp Committee this term as well. So I'd love to hear, you know, what's going on with the Hemp Committee, what your goals are, and what you hope to achieve in this next term here.
Sure.
You want to jump?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, certainly we'd love to see more research done on the cannabinoids, the novel and the hemp derived. And for looking for the Farm Bill 2022, we'd really like for that to include a means to create the infrastructure to help develop the industrial hemp industry, and really with a focus on environmental sustainability and social equity. We would really like to see more than just records expunged, but people who are incarcerated for these charges actually released from prison. So, you know, we're optimistic that we are going to get a lot done this year on our committee.
In addition to that, when we went into the Hemp Committee to begin, which we're in our, I believe, third year now, when the Hemp Committee started, the whole thing was about getting that bridge between hemp and cannabis, where we all understood that it's really the same plant and our objectives really need to align. So aligning the hemp and cannabis industries and an understanding was a big part of our goal, was to bring that education into cannabis and explain cannabis is hemp, and same thing on the hemp side. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important that everybody understands we're all pulling in the same boat mm-hmm. to get to the same place.
Yeah, because the cannabis industry should see what the hemp industry is going through right now. And if they were to be federally legal, they're going to be struggling with the same issues at the federal level that hemp is.
Mm-hmm.
Dietary ingredients, new dietary ingredients. That's what the cannabis industry will struggle with, putting things into foods. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the big struggle.
Absolutely. Well, maybe we can get some old manufacturing facilities updated and converted to start making hemp-based products, you know, more prevalent and more affordable for the average consumer as well. Mm-hmm. And before we go, I'm happy to announce that NCIA will be hosting our 8th annual Cannabis Business Summit and Expo. We'll be returning to the Moscone Center in San Francisco this year. The dates are July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, and you'll start hearing more about that very soon. So stay tuned for that. And thanks to our listeners for tuning into another episode of NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice. Thank you both, Liz and Keith, again for being on the show.
And yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So thanks for tuning in. Until next time.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.